Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fellow fiends, welcome to another terrifying and delectable episode of Nightmare on Film Street, the horror podcast with zero credibility, but all of the blood, ghouls, and gore your puny heart can handle. Let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And this week we are discussing legends of horror.
That is legendary figures in horror movies.
Yeah, not necessarily legendary directors or any well-known people. You know, this sounds like a real bad start because Wishmaster, full of legendary figures in horror.
Oh, that's so true.
Speaking of which, we will be talking about 1997's Wishmaster and 1993's Leprechaun. Both involve
legendary figures.
The djinn and the leprechaun.
Mythical creatures. I don't think they're creatures. They're mythical. Well, I guess they are creatures. None
mythical
of them are human.
Monsters.
In horror.
Before we get started, Kim, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, it has been 2 weeks since we've talked to you guys, so
what's keeping you creepy this fortnight?
Yeah, so it's been 2 weeks since we've talked to you guys. In between that time, we caught Escape Room, which is in theaters now, did upload a Patreon exclusive episode where we did a full review on that. So if you want to hear that, that's at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. But what did you think about Escape Room, John?
Escape Room? It's pretty good. Had some fun rooms. You know, come for the escape, stay for Tyler Labine. Forget about the ending.
Yeah, the ending was not the best. But definitely set themselves up nice and tidy for a sequel, which will definitely be probably in the works very soon.
I would think so. This seems like a franchise in the making.
Mm-hmm. And so it should be, though, because the escape room model sets up for some really unique and fun movies in the same way that I would say Final Destination is really well set up for sequels, because it's very compartmentalized. And you have kind of a it factor for what people are looking for with Final Destination, which why I brought it up is
because, I was like, what do you think for that new Final Destination?
We're getting a reboot. But with that, you're just looking for fun, unique kills, that really fun premonition at the beginning. And that's really all you need to do. You don't need to serve up a whole bunch of character development, a whole whack of plot other than just people running away from death. And in the escape room, it's just interesting rooms, interesting traps, and seeing some characters fall victim to those traps.
Yeah, so, in a potential sequel, you don't even need to explain that it's an escape room. You just need to have five people in a room, and then, oh my god, door's locked, we're in the movie now.
Yeah, so I will definitely be keeping my ears down for a sequel. This movie was okay, but the escape rooms were really neat and they were very ornate, so it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because they've already done some really cool inside, outside, upside down, oven room.
I'm waiting for like the super crazy Channel Zero No End House type segment of that franchise where it just gets real friggin' weird.
Like, this is the room that has a ghost in it, and you're like, fuck.
Real quick, Before we move on, though, what's like your dream opening for a new Final Destination movie? While you think about that, because I'm just blindsiding you with that question. Me, it's set 80 years in the future, and space tourism is a big thing now. So everybody's, it's like exactly like the first movie, except an airplane going to France. We are on a spaceship going to the moon, and we blow up on the fucking landing pad. We hurl ourselves across the horizon. It's like Gravity, but it's a horror movie, and we snap back, and he's like, "We gotta get out of the space pod!" Like, I'm so ready for, like, a Final Destination in space type movie. It'd be so good.
It's so funny you say that, because I tweeted about this a few months ago. My ideal Final Destination sequel is like Pilgrim Village, like 1602. Church burns down,
oh,
and
like
all
back.
The villagers are like on fire. Yeah, and there's a premonition, and then it's like the person with the premonition is also trying to survive the villagers, thinking they're a witch.
Oh, this is so
like,
good.
Heresy.
This is brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, or my second pick is a wedding. Because Final
Cruise
Destination
ship.
Has a whole bunch of people who don't necessarily belong together. They're not friends. You have a variety of ages.
Ooh, wedding's
and
good for that.
Incomes and stuff. And what perfect place than a wedding? You got like Aunt Millie. You have a bridesmaid. You have a cousin who's like 12.
Let me flip that on you right here. Destination wedding on the moon. I need that franchise to go into space, Kim. Final Destination, the final frontier.
Or
it's
like
perfect.
Final Destination causing the witch trials.
Yeah. Yeah. First destination. Initial destination.
Is that your moon titles you're working on over there?
No, I'm working on potential titles for yours.
Oh, I thought that was yours. Like first destination, moon.
No, yours, because we're going back to where it all began. And of course, before we move on, I want to give a big shout out to our most recent patron supporters, Sarah, William, Chloe, and Todd. Thank you so much for your support. And just keep in mind, guys, I've hired you to do one job, and that's paint my house. Two very weird, dumb colors. And I don't want you hitting on my teenage daughter, brushing off all of the dust in my basement. It's all perfectly placed. I want it right there. You touch that four-leaf clover that I got on top of that box, and I'm going to have words with you. You just keep your nose down, paint my house like it's like a bunch of Lego blocks, and call it a day. Get out of there. Leave the shoes alone. I don't care if you... No, where am I going with this? Don't follow any rainbows. Just paint the damn house. I'm sorry to be so strict, but I've had a lot of bad
luck.
Thank you.
If you want to support the show, head to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. We also have a Patreon live stream scheduled for January 26th. That is a Saturday at 2:30 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. We set it a little bit earlier this time, so those of you across the pond in the UK and wherever you're from can get a chance to listen and tune in this time. We're going to talk Glass, the movie, which comes out this weekend, and play some trivia.
Excited to see Glass? Okay, but I mean, as somebody who just rewatched Unbreakable, you excited to see Glass? That sounds like somebody who also just saw Split again. Okay.
Yeah, Unbreakable is really good. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think anybody can argue with that. Unbreakable is fucking good. And rewatching it, it's still fucking good. Split is okay.
Yeah.
And Glass feels like none of those. So it will be interesting to see what it is.
Yeah.
I feel like M. Night Shyamalan's conned me into seeing a superhero film, and
oh,
I'm really
100%.
I'm really not okay with that.
Oh yeah.
Unbreakable is as superhero as I get because it's dark and it's like brooding. Split is a little less dark and it's a little less brooding, and it's just like, but this is sort of a horror film if you squint. And
Glass
is not.
It's going to have 200% more flipped cars. 100%.
So we'll see.
That's enough superhero talk. Let's talk about magical figures.
Legendary figures.
First up, Wishmaster from 1997.
Watch that crate! That's very expensive! Ah!
For centuries, he has remained hidden. Watching. Waiting. And now... he is coming. He knows your secret hopes. He sees your private dreams. And he can grant your every desire.
Well, I'm not a greedy man. How about $1 million?
Even if it kills you.
as you wish.
Beg for your life.
Help me!
Pray for your soul. But whatever you do,
ready to play?
Don't make a wish. Wishmaster.
Careful what you wish for.
So, Wishmaster from 1997. Directed by Robert Kurtzman, Wishmaster is currently sitting at a 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Woo!
Yeah, and a strong 2.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
That's actually pretty high for Letterboxd.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's out of
5.
That's
above average.
That's double the percentage you're getting on Rotten Tomatoes.
Sorry, I just noticed a new freckle.
Okay. Update, everybody. Freckle Watch 2019.
I got a new one.
Yeah. Starting the year off strong. It's a good New Year's resolution, though. I got to give you credit. More freckles.
No, I don't want any more freckles.
Okay, well, maybe if you squeeze real hard, you can get some of them to disappear.
Or give myself an aneurysm.
One of the two. At the very least, your problems are over.
So, Wishmaster. I don't think I'd seen this movie before.
Which surprises the hell out of me.
Yeah.
This is your movie.
It
would have been.
Yeah. I think it was just too far off my radar and too far into horror for my parents to have allowed me to watch it.
I wasn't allowed to watch this when it came out. This is another one of those ones where my dad told me the entire plot because you can't see it. Too scary. Let me tell you everything.
I might have rented it at the cottage, but that was so long ago that I had no memory of it. It feels familiar, but mainly because it feels like a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Really
or
does.
A Tales from the Crypt movie. So watching it, like, I was really unfamiliar with it, but I had this weird, like, deja vu. Like, I should know what this is, and I know what this is, but I don't know what this is.
And horror cameos out the wazoo in this movie, right?
Yeah, so many people in this. And in fun, tiny security guard, bouncer, except for Robert Englund, who's like, I'm the art dealer. And we're like, of course you are, Robert.
Yeah. He's in a pretty good chunk of this movie. I mean, His assistant is Ted Raimi.
If you're not a professor, you're either Freddy Krueger or an art dealer.
And sometimes, if possible, an evil one of all of those.
Yep, pretty much. I don't think he's evil in this. He could have been evil had he been given enough time.
He definitely looks like he wants to be. He cares about his collection more than he cares about people. But I mean,
throwing a really great party.
Yeah, oh, the best parties.
Exactly. So, yeah, let's maybe run through the plot of this. It opens really cool. It's probably one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. It's got this, like, really Arabian Nights vibe. Mm. We're in, like, a Persian bathhouse, if you want to call it that.
I mean, I honestly think it's just kind of the king's palace.
Or a brothel. No, it's definitely, like, a den of inequity.
I mean, hey, if you're the king and you lord over everybody.
His wife is, like, at her mother-in-law's so that the palace has become the den of inequity. And the Persian
Super
Emperor.
Super Bowl weekend in Persia.
Who got the nacho dip? Nacho dip is made of slaves. Yeah, so he's got the gin at that point, and obviously he's wishing willy-nilly, and all of his, like, hand crew are being turned into crazy-ass shit, and it is, like, on fast forward with the special effects. I wish that scene was longer almost, but it's kind of weird because we've already seen the title card, so you're expecting that to be a title card
it's
scene.
It's a weird placement, yeah.
Yeah, because we're already getting into the movie. Like, we've seen the title, we've gotten a whole bunch of mythology via wall of text.
Yeah, well, and so, narrated by Angus Scrim.
So we're ready to start, and here we are in Persia, and we're just doing this whole mythology thing where the djinn gets trapped in the ruby or the emerald, or ruby or amber.
Yeah, ruby.
Whatever it is. It's a big red gem.
Yeah.
Via, like, his right-hand man. Like, I guess that's his sorcerer.
I think that's his sorcerer. Yeah.
But his whole crew gets just obliterated in, like, fantastical, practical special effects ways. My absolute favorite is the goopy, gory skeleton that's running around for, like, two and a half minutes.
Yeah.
I wish the djinn had, like, an MO, and that's...
Oh, okay.
And those creatures that we saw in the beginning were the exact same creatures from the party, even though we'll talk about the party later, because the party later does have some really great practical effects.
Yeah.
But I loved the mythological nature of what everybody turns into way back when.
Yeah, because one guy, like, turns into a snake, We've got another person who is just like sort of sucked into a wall and stuck.
Oh, that,
like,
that is wonderful. And you only see that wall for a split second. It's like, let me see it more.
That weird woman who's like turning into a tree thing. Oh, loved it.
Yeah. And then flash forward, we're in the future.
Yeah.
And that's when we meet Robert England, who is this art dealer who's importing a very important statue with his assistant Ted Raimi, who unfortunately gets squashed by said statue.
Oh, yeah.
Because the crane operator is drinking on the job, which unfortunately I didn't pay attention to the first time. And John was like, Tim, this is really important. You got to see that he's drinking on the job. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, he's drinking on the job.
And it's such a tiny detail that I was like, I really don't want to call this out, but...
He totally did.
Well, I had to!
Ruined the movie.
Yeah, though. You're like, oh, well, it's like when you watch a TV show and they go, previously on all the important bits, and you're like, oh well, I, you know how like in
oh,
Game of Thrones
that.
Like, hey, oh, this is from four seasons ago. Yeah, you're just like, well, I know exactly how this show's playing out.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing we could petition for in the new year, guys, it's
intermissions in movies, right?
And I want to tack on to that bill just say a no more previously ons. If you like, you know what, make them available. And if you need them, you can click here to watch it. I don't want a click here to skip this. I want to click here for recap. I want us to opt into that.
Recap on demand.
But by default, we are opted out.
I don't think there's previously on Netflix.
There are. Not on every show, and I find they only do it when you've like left for a day or a month and come back to the season again.
But back on intermissions.
Yeah.
So why I think they are important is as cinemas expand to being date night event warehouses.
Sure.
They are beginning to offer more foods and beverages on their menus, including in-house dining and drinking. If you're drinking alcohol, you want an intermission.
Okay.
For peeing.
Sure.
And not missing the movie.
I guess.
As somebody who misses the movie a lot, I would like an intermission.
All right. I mean, like, there's definitely a case for them, but...
And that's the same reason why I don't drink in the theater, because it's like, well, I'm... definitely gonna miss some of this film.
Gotta get that run pee app.
Yeah, but then you're looking on your phone and you're being a double asshole, so it's just like Squeaky Shoes is about to get up and she's on her phone first.
Well, I think the idea there is that you look beforehand and you're like, okay.
And you plan it out?
Yeah, because they're very vague about
it. All right, so I'm gonna drink all the soda in the first third of the film so that by the second third of the film...
Well, they say two things like, when this character goes into this room with this painting, you're good to go. And then while you go, you click a button and you get to read what you're missing. Or if your theater is nice and it's like a small repertory theater, like I hear the new Bev is in L.A., they have the audio for the movie piped into the
that's
bathrooms.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
That's
it's harder so to do smart. In a megaplex, though, right? Like, unless you had a bathroom that's literally attached to your movie
they
theater.
They did that once at, where? It was somewhere in Niagara on the Lake when we went to see Sweeney Todd, and I had to excuse myself.
Well, yeah, like, at the Shaw Theater, it's one theater.
They had screens in there, and you could watch
it's pretty
the,
cool.
like, the play while you were washing your hands.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then I had to wait for, like, a break in the action so they would let me back in, and I was like, oh my god. But I could watch it on the screen, which I guess is okay. So where are we in this film? Squashed.
Yeah, squashed. So after being squashed, of course, the gem pops out. Some guy takes it, pawns it, and it makes its way from person to person until the genie, Jin, is summoned again. And, you know, sure, it's like your basic Aladdin story. You get three wishes, but the twist here is that not only do you get three wishes, it's that whoever summons the djinn after that third wish gives the djinn enough power to open the portal between, like, the hell and earth.
And let, like, a bunch of baddies out.
Yeah, bad guys win. Yeah, that's what it is. So, yep. Whoever summons the djinn cannot have a third wish.
But unless he gives them a free wish.
Well, it's, yeah, right? Yeah, you want a free one? You want to taste test this?
That's like the scene in Bedazzled where...
Where he gets a burger?
Where he gets... Didn't even get any fries! Yeah. But that's not a free wish, because he thinks
that's
it's
not
a
free
wish
at
and
all.
Then it counts towards his wishes. And that's...
Which I think is BS.
Oh, man. Yeah, so Alex, who's the appraiser...
Oh, we're not
going
to refer to her as Alexandra?
Alexandra.
Have you ever met anybody named Alexandra?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Is the one that wakes up the djinn because she's... putting it through her lasers or looking through
her spyglass. I think it's because she rubs it. I don't know if it's necessarily because she breathes on it, but she does breathe on it.
Oh,
because
she rubs it.
The music swells
a little
bit.
Like a lamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how we can completely twist and be very creative with all of the aspects of the cultural genie story that we have in North America, but rubbing it, that's how you get it out of the
classic,
box.
Classic genie. And they even say, look, no, it's not like that Robin Williams or whatever. And it blew my mind that this movie came out after Aladdin.
Oh.
My mind was blown. The whole film, I was like, I can't believe that Robin Williams' genie exists when this movie came out.
Don't you know? Well, I guess the
cartoons are forever. They're not dated like live action films.
Well, the only problem with Aladdin is that it is a little dated because it's Robin Williams. He's got all these pop cultural references.
No, I guess that's true.
Yeah, you show that to a kid now. I bet they don't even.
They'd be like, "What?"
I don't think we got it either. Like, yeah, Johnny Carson. Like, as a 6-year old, I'm not gonna know any of that shit.
Yeah, my biggest problem with this film is the gym is too evil.
Okay.
There's no stakes because of how good he is at convincing people to wish things.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person he interacts with is dead or has sold their soul to him in 20 seconds or less. And he's super efficient and that's great or whatever, but the stakes in those scenes are so low for me because I've caught on pretty quickly by the time the phantasm guy has cancer that he's getting whatever he wants. And he, honestly, the way he gets people to wish is such a cop-out.
Okay.
He literally is like, so you wish it, right? And they're like, yeah, I wish it. And yeah. He's like, ha-ha! And then he runs away. Like,
yeah, I mean, in this movie, it's not even, you can't, it's not even, you don't have to say the word wish.
No, you're just like, sure. And then he's like, ha-ha! You're a mannequin now.
I'd love to see this. I wish I could. I hope to have that. Wouldn't this
or
be
I
great?
Or I sure would like for something. And he's like, yeah. Meh.
So any want or desire, right? I'm fine with that.
That's not wishing, though.
Two
and
things
I think
about
there needs to be a consent. Those people need to know that they're wishing from a genie.
So two things here. One, they are bound by their word. He's bound by theirs. He can't help but make wishes. I mean, like, there's something built in there. But two things that I think really address your point. One, this is a special effects-driven movie. It is all about just moment to moment, what are we going to do? And the craziest thing, and I mean, it's directed by Robert Kurtzman, who is a special effects guy. The weakest points of this movie is anything regarding CGI. Because it's a practical effects spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, there is this really great moment which sums up everything, where Alex goes to talk, when she goes to talk to the professor of all of these cultural myths and legends.
I love her, by the way.
She's great in this
she's
movie.
She's so sassy in a really fun way, but when she's later, when she's actually already become the djinn and he's impersonating her, he's like her to like level 12.
Yes.
But he's still trying to be her, but he's also djinning it up. Like,
yeah, her performance there is great.
Yeah, he is nasty. Like, he's playing a nasty lady.
Absolutely. And she does a great job with it. And that's the scene I'm talking about, because he's explaining to her and he's really boasting, hey, you know, if this djinn character came to your world, ruled by reason, that is essentially scientifically driven, he would be unmatched and all powerful. And not only that, no one would ever believe that what he could do is possible. So they could all be tricked. Like, oh, yeah, sure, wishes come true. Yeah, whatever, I wish my entire family was dead. And then, boom, they're dead. Nobody is prepared for it whatsoever. So they all fall for it because nobody believes it's real. And to them, it's just words, and words don't mean anything. But words are everything for him.
That's a really great point. I think that works for the character they've created.
Yeah.
And it works for the universe
but
that they have built.
You're talking about, like, movie making.
I'm talking on, like, a level of, yeah, believability. I do not believe this djinn exists. There's maybe a world in which there's a djinn that I would believe in, and he wouldn't be that powerful. I guess it's because the rules seem a little arbitrary, because he's just like, I gotta get power first, and then I gotta convince that girl that woke me up to make her wishes.
Yeah. So you're like, I guess the problem is that he's not powerful enough to get her to do her three wishes yet, but he is powerful enough to do whatever the fuck else he wants to anybody.
Exactly. Like, he's
you want
he's
him
just
to fall
walking,
on his feet a few times.
He's just, yeah, walking and snapping down bodies immediately. Like, I'm not seeing him build in strength, at least in terms of him matching the willpower of other humans. He defeats every single other person but her.
Well,
from the beginning.
I guess he's not powerful enough to collect their souls immediately, maybe. I do love that he needs to call in all the souls that are owed to him
Fair. See, I don't like that rule either. He should have to wait for them to die.
I think once he's powerful enough, like otherwise he would have had to wait. But he's gained enough power that he can do that. It is interesting. It seems like he has to call those souls in to gain enough power to take another form. But he didn't need to do. Isn't that he does that right before he becomes Wendy, right?
I don't know, because he becomes the dreamboat before he claims their souls, because that's how he turns the mannequin girl. Which, I have to say, though, when he calls the souls, her as the mannequin in the back room,
where her eyes roll back.
I loved that. Yeah. Okay, so that's my new favorite. That moment's my favorite, and then the opening Arabian Nights thing.
What is my favorite part of this movie?
Oh, those eyes rolling back. Oh, so good.
I know exactly what my favorite part of this movie was. And you know what? It creeped the shit out of me as a kid. I actually remember being scared by this moment, and it's such a...
I thought you didn't see it.
Well, when I first saw it.
Okay.
I was too young
I was so creeped out when my dad told me about this moment.
To be honest, I think I ended up seeing this like a week later after my dad told me everything, because it came out when I was 9, so if I had seen this when I was 13, I don't think it would have affected me very much. But somewhere around 10 or 11 or whatever, when Jack the Ripper came out of that painting I completely forgot about it. It's just his eyes. And
he's a pretty silly Jack Ripper.
I know. That's why watching it now, it kind of made me laugh that I was scared by him.
But I guess he's a painting version. So he's not actually Jack the Ripper. He's an interpretation an artist had of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, it's a rendering.
Which is what all of the art that comes to life is.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a very good unless it's a statue itself. But I mean, really, all art is a mirrored image of a thought, of a thing, right? Isn't that what makes art interesting?
Except for the sister, because the sister gets thrown into that painting, and it's actually the sister in the painting. And then he lights the painting on fire, or he lights inside the painting on fire.
Yeah.
He turns the painting to a painting on fire.
I don't really love that scene. I like that he does that because she's so tortured over the death of her family.
But I just love, so Final Showdown, when they're all at Robert Englund's house, he's having a big party. They have a really fun scene where Robert Englund wishes for the best party ever, and so the djinn just like goes crazy and kills a bunch of people with piano wires.
That piano wire death is great.
It is pretty great. And that's probably the best CGI use of the film.
Is that CGI?
The piano wires moving around is CGI.
Yeah.
The Kane Hodder explosion CGI.
Not
great.
I got to assume that they tried to do something else in that scene first.
And just didn't work out.
Yeah, because if you want to get through here, you got to go through me.
Yeah.
Surely.
That could have been a really cool practical effect ripping through his body
thing. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it just didn't work out.
That's what I'm thinking.
The dummy or something. And they're like, that's fine. We'll just do something in post. It's like, turn him into glass. Shards of glass.
Yeah, and then instead of opening a door, literally walking through him, he morphs through the glass. Like, where there was a door, he now makes it a solid sheet of glass. And then he explodes afterward.
Into a desktop wallpaper. Tony Todd is also a gatekeeper. He is the security at the party, and he is great in that. He gets a really long
He has an emotional arc, actually. Yeah,
with the djinn. And then he eventually gets, in Houdini's water trick.
Yeah, because he preys on his desire for something bigger, to escape this fucking life that he has.
And he's like, here's the opportunity to escape. Houdini did it in, under 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That was great.
More than anybody else, that would fucking... Actually, you know what? No, I'm gonna keep coming back to that mannequin. That mannequin's the worst one, because there's no way she's not fully conscious inside that mannequin, right?
Well, she definitely is, because when he calls her, her soul is in there, so she is in there. I'm trying to think if there's any other cool deaths in that party sequence.
Oh, there's a ton of great deaths. There is the skeleton that jumps out of the guy's body. There is the weird, ectoplasm-y creature that comes out of Robert Englund's mouth. I don't even know what that was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
No idea. And filming that must have been hilarious, because we've got this goopy, writhing thing on the floor. We just need you to put its tail in your mouth, Robert. We just need you to, hey, Bob, you want to do me a favor? Put this tail in your mouth and just, act really surprised by it. And that's, action, got it. Oh, perfect. That's going in the can.
What is this crudité?
This is not the tavernette I ordered.
But throughout the movie, so this Alex and the djinn are psychically linked. So every time he claims a soul or kills a person via their own wish, she gets like a moment.
Yeah, like a dead zone flash.
Most often when she's around police officers when her friends are dead. So why aren't they taking her in for questioning is just my first thought.
Yeah, maybe.
Because like her friend is dead, the gem guy at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. And she's all like emotionally like, and he's like, do you know her? And he's like, yeah, he's working on a job for me. And then she has her like big psychic moment. She runs off and the head cop is like, no, let her go.
Let her go.
Like, no, you need to question this mentally unstable woman.
Yeah.
Also, she came to a crime scene.
Yeah, and we all know the criminal will return to the crime scene.
They didn't even ask her when she dropped the gem off. Like, get some alibis.
Anything, really. I love how they just talk to her in front of the dead body, too. Like, she like bumps her way into a crime scene. Like,
you've
no, it's fine.
You've seen this corpse before? Is he your friend? Did he look like this when you last saw him?
I mean, maybe that's just, like, the cold nature of a police officer. I remember a friend of mine whose, like, uncle was a cop, and we asked him about that. Like, hey, so, like, you see, like, dead bodies. Because we're kids. Like, it's something you're just, like, morbidly fascinated with. And he's
or, like, what did you see more in the job? Did you see more donuts or more dead bodies?
Yeah, well, the thing is, he's just like, what do you see more of? He's like, and I'm sure this is a common story with every police officer, is that, yeah, you just get desensitized to it. It's just like inventory at work. You don't even really think about it. He went to go see some guy who jumped out of a building, and instead of thinking like, wow, this is sad, he's like, man, my Egg McMuffin's getting cold. Like, he's just so cold to the world, aww, right?
I think we get like that, though, with all of our violent content.
Yeah, but not with real people.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Alex, this entire time...
Who we haven't talked about at all.
Yeah, because, well, she smokes a lot, like...
A lot.
Yeah, we could have paired this literally with Candyman because of the amount of smoking in this film.
Oh, yeah.
So her whole thing is she's psychically linked to the djinn, so she's basically trying to find out as much about him as she can. So she's as equally matched, I guess, for their final showdown. So she spends the whole movie researching him, which is fine and dandy, but then she goes to this final party where she knows she's going to meet the djinn because she only has one wish left. Her sister's there. The djinn knows that's her weakness. She knows that's her weakness and that he's going to exploit it.
Yeah.
So she goes to meet him and she has no fucking plan.
None.
Literally the final moment when she does her thing to...
It only just occurs to her then.
Yeah. And her sister is literally on fire beside her and is like, bitch, why didn't you allot some time to formulate a plan first? Even on the drive over, you could have thought about your plan.
No, instead you're too busy going like, I wonder how I'm going to get the girls to win the next basketball game. Why does she teach basketball? I think we're just supposed to see that she's like a caring person who gives back to the community.
It's honestly because her life is so small, this poor character.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But I guess they kind of fixed it at the end because she has that little romantic moment where she's kind of like happy and aware of her situation, I guess, and how much worse things could have been. So it makes her a little bolder, but she's appraiser or like a gemologist. I'm not sure her official title.
That's the word they use in the movie, yeah.
I'm
not saying
and
it's
then
right.
She teaches, I guess it's community basketball because yeah, she can't just... be a teacher.
I don't think they allow high school teachers to just coach basketball
and
then
nothing
go
else.
Home.
Yeah, but she also consults with that other teacher. So you assume she's part of faculty?
Wait, you mean Wendy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she seeks her out because Robert Englund's character recommends her.
Oh.
Like, oh, go talk to this woman.
They could have just made her a teacher, but I guess then why would she have the gemstone?
Yeah, that's really it. She's just got to get the stone and pass it. She could be the person in the department of a university who studies ancient gems?
Yeah.
Is that a department?
I guess it's just kind of sad. She lives with her sister, and then when
but
she's...
But because she's got to protect her sister.
Yeah, but... So when she's obsessed about the djinn, and she's chain-smoking in her kitchen and reading, her sister's like, hey, I left early to give you the car. And then she was like, what for? And it's so she could go to basketball to teach those kids, and in that scene, you're just like, oh, I bet you there's, like, an empty package of cookie dough, like... in the garbage can under
maybe.
The sink, or like she ate a whole case of Pringles, or you know, something sad like that.
Well, I think the smoking is the externalization of guilt, right? Like her entire family died in a fire. She only had an opportunity to save her sister, not her parents. So she constantly takes on that weight that she feels responsible for their death. And I think smoking and breathing fire is her
literal representation.
Yeah, and just saying, like, I'm responsible
for micro-suicides.
Yeah, exactly, right? Just bringing herself down.
It's fun how much smoking is a story device in films in the 90s, because nowadays people don't really smoke in film because it's not something that we do as much socially.
Yeah.
So if like a character...
Constantine might have been the first one in a long time.
But if a character is smoking in a movie past like 1992, it is an intentional decision, and it relates to that character's anxieties or depression or negative view towards life.
Yeah.
So what does she wish? What is her big wish
thing? Her big wish is that, so in the beginning of the movie, they talk about how when she's doing the research for the incident, they focus more on the guy drinking on the job who was responsible for the death than the actual statue. I need to know more about what this statue is and where it's from and what it does. And so that's them laying the groundwork for her having all of this backstory on what happened during that event, so she could say, I wish Michael Tierney wasn't drinking on the job on Thursday, because this movie takes place over like 2.5 days.
And the djinn's like, ma-ha-ha, and then he realizes what he's done, which undoes everything, because if that guy's not drinking on the job, that statue doesn't get dropped, the stone doesn't break out, that guy doesn't steal it, she doesn't find it, she doesn't rub it.
Robert Englund has one of the greatest showcases of it, his art house. I don't even know.
And the djinn is still trapped inside.
Yeah.
Bored as fuck.
For eternity. In a room of dead, forgotten gods.
Yeah. It's okay. That's good.
I liked it.
Yeah. It's a nice little tie up at the end.
I remember liking this movie a lot when I was a kid.
I feel like with how powerful the djinn was, he could have figured out a way around that little wish.
Well, see, that's his weakness, though. He can't help but.
But I think his ego had him grant it before he realized what he was granting.
That's what I'm saying.
I think he just like jumped the gun on that one and granted it, and then he was like, fuck.
I think he does that with all of them. It's his hubris as a djinn. Because he's gaining power with every wish that he grants.
Mm-hmm.
So he's only thinking about the power that he's going to get from that. Plus, he's also so focused on, well, third wish, this is it. I get to fucking rule the world.
Finally. I do want to talk about, though, before we move on.
Yeah.
What do you think about the practical design of the djinn when he's not that dreamboat?
Ah, he looks like, kind of looks like Freddy with horns.
Yeah. I thought he looked kind of like
Jeepers Creepers with horns.
Yeah.
Of course, this is
like I know,
10 years before Jeepers Creepers.
Power Ranger villain.
Okay.
That's what I was feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he was like evil.
I think he looks all right.
Versus robots.
I really like him as Nathaniel Demarest, like in his human form. He looks so fucking sinister as a person.
He was mean too.
Yeah.
Like good mean, but still mean. And another thing I really liked was I liked the design of his like lair thing. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, like the Hellraiser room, basically.
Yeah, the tunnels were fun, and the Cerberus-y dogs that he had.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was big. He had quite the lush...
Yeah, when you think about a Jeep, you don't think about them having a condo inside that lamp.
This is one cushy gem.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, oh, I've been trapped forever. Like, I get it. Being trapped and not being able to, like, do your evil bidding, that's gotta suck. But it's like somebody saying, we're gonna put you in prison, but... In a weird turn of events, prison is Disney World, so fucking enjoy your...
I mean, you're going to be bored, but it's pretty lush in here. And yeah. His chair looked pretty comfy. I mean, and he had friends in there, I think.
Oh, so quick question, now that I'm thinking about it. If you were sentenced to 20 years in prison, but prison was Disney World, what is the... And you could only stay on one ride. What's the
Haunted
one?
Mansion.
What's the one ride you wish you weren't trapped on?
Oh, Small World.
You would take the Small World over the Hall of Presidents?
Oh, God. Is that a ride? That's not a ride. That's a...
Okay, well, I mean, like
that's
any
like a building,
any attraction room thing you can sit in.
Small World.
Small World would drive you crazy.
I don't want to be on a tiny, like, stinky boat for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And that boat moves so slow. So slow. Or like the Dumbo ride where you're just like...
you're just going up and down.
Although at least you're outside with, like, it's a Small World. It's like fucking dark in there. Which is like Haunted Mansion. It's fine. Fits the theme.
Yeah, now that you say it,
you
don't know.
You sleep in your little doom buggy.
I don't know if there's anybody that wouldn't pick It's a Small World. Hall of Presidents is a little boring, but it's like, meh.
Okay, so what's your rating of Wishmaster?
It's 90s cheesy, but it's my brand of 90s cheesy. I give Wishmaster a 2 out of 4, but it's a strong 2 out of 4. I like it, but it's not a great movie.
I am also going to go 2 out of 4, but it's like a low 2
out
of 4.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You didn't like that Jack the Ripper.
I didn't love... You know, I like this movie because it's got that Tales from the Crypt vibe, and it feels very 90s.
This would have been a really cool standalone Tales from the Crypt movie.
Yeah.
I gotta give you credit for that. That was a great pull.
Yeah, but I just felt like he was too powerful. And you're right, it was in service of getting as many practical special effects moments in there.
Which they do.
Which they did, and they are all really great and fun. But yeah, she just doesn't feel like a strong enough character to beat him, and then she does, and you're like, oh, we knew it.
Yeah, she's a pretty weak character.
Yeah.
If she was, I don't know, if she was stronger or she had more to do, because it's not her fault as an actress. Like, she's doing a perfectly fine
job.
Yeah,
no, she's great, and it's just like
But their back and forth is very nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit made for TV.
Yeah, because you're right, the conversation between them, where there's a bit of a power exchange when he's Wendy, is great if we had that much, I am gonna kill you if you don't make wishes, but you better start making some wishes, and she doesn't want to make wishes. That's a cool little area, but that's 5 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But moving on, we are going to talk about Leprechaun from 1993.
The luck of the Irish is being packed and shipped to a little town in South Dakota whose luck may have just run out.
So, Leprechaun from 1993. Directed by Mark Jones, Leprechaun is currently sitting at a 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 23% on Rotten Tomatoes, similar to Wishmaster, and also a 2.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Wow.
People on Letterboxd like Wishmaster more than they like Leprechaun.
I thought this film had like a a better haze around it. Like, the time was kind to Leprechaun.
I would say that I assume more people like Leprechaun. You know, maybe it's that more people have watched Leprechaun and continue to watch Leprechaun, which, whether or not they like it, has a more fluctuating score on something like Letterboxd.
That is true, because it's definitely a holiday movie, whether or not it intended to be. I think a lot of people watch this in April, around the old...
That's a really good point.
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. They've cornered the market on St. Patrick's Day horror.
Mm-hmm.
I will admit, I've never really liked this movie.
I also don't think I've ever really liked this movie. I really tried to give it a shot in this watch. Like, I was like, okay, I'm dropping all my feelings about, but I do like the Leprechaun. I like the franchise as a concept. I love that he's gone to the hood. I love that he has gone to space.
I mean, like, I appreciate that people have done those things.
And I love the zaniness of it. And I do really appreciate that the Leprechaun was silly and campy and kind of cheesy from the get-go. That okay. I really appreciate. A lot of other horror franchises have kind of grown into that.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare on Elm Street is one of them. It started out not to its fault or anything. Mm-hmm. I love the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I love how scary it is. Freddy is, he was always kind of a trickster, but he was a gross and gory trickster. And he became more silly and fun as the franchise went on. I would say Jason.
Oh, definitely.
Changed and evolved. I mean, Jason wasn't even on the top billing of the first film. So, but I love that Warwick Davis got to be and embody that Leprechaun character so early on in the movie.
Yeah.
Or early on in the franchise.
And it makes sense. For that villain, too. How are you going to really make a mischievous little leprechaun
The premise is a little silly.
Yeah.
Like, how scary is a villain that's only 2-3 feet tall going to be?
Yeah.
And especially, like, his kills have to be over the top because he's so small.
Yeah. I feel like I don't have anything to add here. It's just, like, parts... Like, that's also kind of just, like, what I don't love about the movie. Maybe it's that I have an easier time with movies that are... very, I don't want to say sincere, because I think this movie is, from the get-go, it's really doing what it wants to do initially. I think I like it when a franchise starts out very serious and then grows to something comical, like Evil Dead, I guess, or Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. Something about this being a comedy from the get-go is maybe what I don't love about it. It might even just be that he's a silly villain. Like, oh, he's gotta find the people that took his gold.
You have to
them.
Admit, though, that the plot of this movie isn't great, and the story isn't well done.
Sure.
But had it have been executed well, introducing us to a feisty leprechaun killer from the get-go, who's witty and has zingers and one-liners, what was the right choice?
Agreed. And they did a great job with that. Like, if their mission statement, their goals, they achieved them. They checked those boxes. Everything that they intended to do, they did. And it's all there on the screen. So personal preference then is what it comes down to. Because I think everything that they were trying to accomplish, they accomplished.
Yeah. And another big problem I have is that I grew up with Willow. So I grew up with Warwick Davis as my hero.
Yeah.
And I really loved him for saving the day.
Sure.
And in this, he sounds very much like himself. Like, he's doing his voice just a little bit Irishy. So, like, that's a little traumatizing to me. It kind of crushes my soul a little bit. He's That's great, so though. He's amazing.
He's great, yeah.
But yeah, I'm just like, Willow.
So Mr. O'Grady locks the leprechaun in a crate in his basement after having a heart attack while trying to hide the evidence of his deceased wife and this leprechaun who's trying to murder him for stealing his gold. Now, follow me here. Does Mr. O'Grady go to Ireland?
Because his mom has died.
Okay.
And he's bringing her ashes back to be scattered on the family farm. But instead of bringing back her ashes, he steals a leprechaun's gold and smuggles the gold in the urn.
Oh, so he doesn't actually bring the ashes back whatsoever?
No!
He could do both! He could,
could
have put the gold in the urn, ashes on top, hidden everything.
Nope.
Especially from...
If there's anything that Mr. O'Grady is, it's greedy.
That is very true. And drunk. A whole bottle of Jameson to himself from the airport to his house. Like, he finishes that bottle off in the front yard. There's no way they let him drink an open bottle on the airplane. But, I don't know. Air Ireland, different rules. Could be.
So flash forward, how many years? 10 years? 20 years?
I don't even know.
Flash forward to the...
Sometime. I think early 90s. 10 years, yeah.
I can't remember what her dad's name is.
Tori and Dad have, yeah, I don't remember. Does he have a
it's
name?
It's like J.P. Morgan or something, or J.B. It's like a two-letter type of name.
Got it.
He goes by his initials. I can't remember what they are, and I didn't write them down.
Jeep Dad.
So he buys this dusty old farmhouse and is like, we're going to live here.
We're gonna paint it like it's a toy playhouse.
And then he exits the movie.
That's it, yeah. He gets bitten and he's gone. Like, he's only around to drive Jennifer Aniston to the set and to instruct them to paint the goofiest colors on their house.
Like, primary blue house and then bright red shutters.
Yeah.
No primer.
No. That,
and nobody has power washed the house.
No, we're not gonna sand it. We're not gonna coat it, prime it, nothing. We're, and in fact... Painting? That's the first thing we're
exactly.
doing.
You know what? We're going to live here. But and the whole movie, John, this bugged me the entire movie. And I know you know this because you watched me sit through it.
Yeah.
And like with me wringing my hands. Nobody dusts. There are cobwebs, like webby ass, gross, hanging, dangling, corner crammed in, just everywhere. I want to say pounds of cobwebs, but there's probably a pound of cobwebs of them all. But that's a lot of cobwebs.
That's a lot of cobwebs.
Everywhere, throughout the entire house. And nobody dusts. And they are staying there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we're going to paint the exterior. Somebody needs to wash the floor, do some dusting, and get some ice for the freezer.
I mean, clearly this was a time before HGTV, the DIY network. They haven't watched the homeowners specials, whatever they're called. The love it or list it.
But no wonder why Jennifer Aniston is threatening to go to a hotel the whole movie, literally the whole movie.
Well, there's a tarantula in the basement.
An evil leprechaun, and nobody has dusted.
Yeah.
The entire film. The whole movie. They are sitting on couches and there's cobwebs. I can't handle it. I cannot deal with it. I know that it made for a spooky set, and like especially when that leprechaun is rolling around those halls on the skateboard and the spooky cobwebs are everywhere. But like, fucking dust, you wieners. And they're paying paint crew who are there the whole time, like 2 or 3 days. Overnights as well, because, you know, they're part of the family now.
Yeah, they really are. As soon as they show up, it's Cousin Ozzy and Uncle Nathan, little baby Alex.
Why didn't they hire a maid crew?
Atmosphere.
Mm.
But yeah, I would assume that the painting would be the absolute
last thing
you do.
The exterior.
Also, I mean, why are we harping on this? We're just your choices in decor are terrible. Like, I would change that siding. That looks just like raw wood siding. Come on.
But this is the first film in the franchise. They could have gone with anything for their plot. And they're like, okay, so who are our main characters for this movie going to be? You're like, okay, how about an 8-year-old kid? Because you need, like, a kid hero, you know, Gremlins.
Who knows more about taxes and insurance than his adult companion.
Yeah, and then you need, like, one of those, like, simple, smart, small town guys who's kind of goofy and stupid for people to, like, you know, laugh at and joke with and empathize with. So you need him. And then you need a dreamboat. And if we're going to have a dreamboat, then we also have a girl that's going to, you know, be in love with him. And that's going to be what makes her stay there because it's small town. She's from L.A. and she wants that California life. So it's like, why... is it a paint crew that are the main characters of this movie? And what are they called? Three guys that paint?
Three guys that paint.
One of them is 8. One of them is 8 years old.
They're future-proofing with that name. Because eventually, they will be three guys. Right now, they are 2 men and a baby.
Literally. Did they plan on being an overnight paint crew the whole time? Or they decided to stay with Tori because her dad gets bitten by a cat? Precon, and
yeah.
They're like, oh, we can't leave her alone here in this dust wagon.
I think that's exactly what it is. But
they're strangers.
Well, yeah, I know they're strangers, but let's maybe Dad knows them. Let's just focus on the cat, the kitty precon, kitty leprechaun,
Capricorn.
For a second here, because that whole sequence, how it unfolds, fucking crazy.
It's
so
weird. So it is a weird scene.
So Dreamboat leaves Tori at the truck.
She's in the back of the truck. She's like rifling through for primer or whatever. The guys are at the house. They are painting. She's alone at the truck.
And then underneath the truck, little leprechaun caressing her leg.
Broad fucking cloudy, blue sky, daylight.
And she's just like, oh, Nathan.
1 foot off the ground.
It's not as
though... Did he crouch down behind her and go, I'm gonna touch your ankles.
It's not even that. He crouches down behind her, reaches in front of her, and caresses from the front. Because he's caressing the front of her leg.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Nathan, don't do... What are you...
Silly.
Not here. Nathan.
It's so sunny out.
But then when Nathan's like, what? What's going on? She gets weirded out.
Yeah, and then the leprechaun scratches her. She screams.
Which should have infected her. She should have became a leprechaun.
Oh, that would have been so fucking
right?
great.
Curse of the Leprechaun. That could have been the end of the movie.
Like, leprechaun is like werewolfism. I like it. And then like her transformation is just her getting greedier and greedier.
Oh, right. Throughout the movie, and you're like, why are you being such a bitch, Tori? But by the end, after like Leprechaun has melted and fallen into the well, she's like, now, where's me gold?
Oh,
like
so
that would have been great.
So
credits.
Good.
And then just like eyes piercing through blackness. And then maybe like a Jennifer Aniston cackly leprechaun laugh. I'm like, oh man, can't wait for that sequel. It's going to be lit.
But so after she gets scratched, she falls down, she's screaming. Dad runs from nowhere. Dad was not in the scene.
Yeah.
He comes from I don't know, the break table.
My daddy senses were tingling.
And,
is everything okay?
Well, and she's just talking about how somebody scratched her, and she's like, and he was caressing my leg.
Like, oh, well, it's maybe a cat. She's like, I know the difference between a cat and a man caressing my leg.
Does what?
In front of your dad.
One,
also, like, cats don't caress legs.
Can we stop saying caress?
Yeah, we couldn't come up with something else. Just pull a fucking thesaurus out.
Touch grazing my leg.
So dad's like the cat. Oh, you know what? I hear a cat. It's over here in this tree trunk.
And there's
what?
Literally a leprechaun in a log going like, meow, 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 meow. It was just a cat. Where my gold?
And so he sticks his whole arm into the tree trunk.
He's like, come here, cat.
Up
like,
to the
shoulder. You know what a rabid cat is going to do whether or not they're actually a leprechaun? They're going to bite your fucking hand.
And they're also going to hide. Like, any animal that's hiding is ready to bite.
Yeah, but you don't corner any animal.
That's what I'm getting at.
What if it was a possum or a raccoon who was like, rabies?
Anything.
Rabies, duh.
Yeah. You just stick your whole goddamn
arm
in
there. No wonder that you got bit.
Yeah, of course. This is on you, Dad.
So then in like a weird turn of events, we leave the farmhouse. We're all rushing to the emergency room because Dad's been bitten pretty bad. And
the doctor's like, I don't know. We're probably going to have to keep him here until well after the end credits. You guys better go on and have your own adventure.
Yeah.
By yourselves.
Then, so from that point on, Jennifer Aniston's like, I guess I'm going to hang out with the paint crew.
Yeah.
And so they're at a diner. And there's, like, some character development where we learn Jennifer Aniston may be a vegetarian, but not a very good one.
Yeah.
And then the Aussie and the kid...
Alex.
They take one of the gold coins. Oh, my God,
we forgot
that
about
they
that.
Found the gold
they
coins!
They literally go, like, hey, let's follow that fucking rainbow.
Oh, man.
And they find the end of the rainbow.
They find some gold.
Oh, it's worth it.
Aussie accidentally eats one because he's biting it to see if it's real gold, so he's got a cold.
Yeah,
coin
how does that
belly.
Happen? I'm gonna bite it, see if it's real. Oh, I swallowed it.
Like, uh-oh.
That's the only reason his character's so dumb. It's
yeah.
for that moment. Because how would that ever happen? If maybe he got scared and be like, whoop, like accidentally swallowed it. Sure, maybe, because it's a cartoon world.
But we didn't mention, so the leprechaun has followed them on a tricycle that he found in the garage. That garage, that leprechaun, even though he's been trapped in a crate for like 15 years or whatever, has definitely been stashing miniature transportation systems in that shed this entire time. Because he goes into that shed is like a cavern of toys for this leprechaun.
Yeah.
At one point he comes out in a car that's like souped up.
Yeah, he's got like a Mad Max style armored car. It's pretty great.
He finds a car at the pawn shop. He's got the pogo stick. He rides skateboard. He rides rollerblades. Like every option, this leprechaun's got it.
I also like that the leprechaun knows how silly everything is. Because just him riding on the tricycle, he's aware it's silly. Even he's giggling to himself like, oh, this is fucking hilarious. And he takes off. He follows him into town. And unfortunately, they leave one of them coins with the pawn shop owner, who does not deserve to be killed.
Don't you think, though, it would have been better if the leprechaun, like, Cape Fear style, attached himself
to
the bottom of
the car?
Truck?
Oh,
yes!
Oh, God, that'd be great!
Right?
Because he's full of belt buckles.
He is! He's a walking buckle!
Yeah. Also, do you think in Cape Fear that he had to string together more than one belt to tie himself under the carriage of the car?
I don't know. don't know.
I guess you could just get like a big fat guy belt, right? And then that. How are you good? Maybe he holds. How does that work? There's no way that's even possible.
That's fine, though. It's a movie.
Okay.
And not the movie we're talking about right now.
No, not at all. Infinitely more terrifying. But yeah, the leprechaun really gives nobody an opportunity to give him the gold back. He is very much kill first, gold questions later.
Because he's feisty and he's happy to be free. I understand him.
Because he just likes killing.
Yeah, he's feisty.
So, I don't know if this is 100% the legend of the leprechaun, like the mythology of it. Was he just some greedy guy who sold his soul for gold? Because he mentions that in the movie.
No, I think they're actually just mythical creatures. They're like a gnome or a...
Yeah. But what's their origin?
Like an imp or a...
Wasn't just like God created the heavens and the leprechauns. Like they had to have come from somewhere.
I think they just live in the woods like fairies.
Right.
And they have gold and they're very greedy. And you can trick them and take their gold, but they don't like it.
Yeah, I know they don't like it, and I get that. I guess I just liked that in this movie, they actually gave me a reason for it. Like, why he needs that gold so bad. Because he's traded his soul for it. That's why he's eternal, I guess, right? Like, he'll live forever, but he'll always be fighting to keep this gold. I like that idea. I think that's interesting.
My favorite thing, though, about the lore is the shoe. The shoe thing. I think that's such a fun little, like, that he's a cobbler and he's like a possessed cobbler.
Oh, you just mean the idea that he's a cobbler by trade.
But yeah, but in that part where they're trying to get away the second time.
And they throw shoes at
where
him.
Where they're throwing shoes and he's like...
he's like, he's got to polish all the shoes.
But he's almost not even mad. He's not even like, oh, you fuckers. So he's enjoys like, ooh, it. A shoe. Yeah. Like a cat with a laser pointer. You okay. know what I mean? Like,
sure.
He's just like,
what if
ooh.
They told Warwick Davis, like, okay, in this scene, you're a cat. And we've been throwing toys at you. Like, what if that was just his entire motivation?
Well, yeah, because when you use a laser pointer with a cat, the cat knows that you're doing it because if you stop, the cat will look at you and be like, make with the lasers.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, but like during the cat's like, oh yeah, guess who's a hunter now?
Yeah, like they can't avoid it. They would love to be doing anything else, and they know it's just a weakness of theirs.
Yeah, like even if you put it on the ceiling, they can't reach it, but they are fucking gonna watch where that laser goes.
Oh, they're staring at. Man, we gotta get a laser pointer for the
and
dog.
A cat. Oh.
Oh.
What? What else happens in Leprechaun?
Well, he kills the guy with the pogo, which is pretty cool at the pawn shop.
Yeah, except the cuts aren't great.
No,
like
the
you
cuts
don't
aren't
ever
great.
See him jumping on the pogo, and I get that's hard. Like
yeah. I think they pad that guy out, right? Like, I was talking about this while we were watching.
Yeah,
I think
they definitely tried to, and it didn't work out. So there's just cuts of the pogo smushing some guy, and then Warwick Davis being like, yeah!
Warwick Davis is really giving his all in this movie, I gotta say.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, that cop that pulls him over, too, is really giving him a hard time, especially given that the cop thinks he's a kid. And he's like, all right, you little fucker, pull over, get out of the goddamn car. And you're like, this guy thinks he's talking to a child.
Isn't it a little late? Like, even in this universe, little people definitely exist.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a guy coming from, like, you know, like a birthday party or a play. Like, treat him like an adult human being, maybe.
Yeah.
He has a beard.
That scene where they're trying to look for four-leaf clovers toward the end of the movie is really bizarre because there's just, like, a green floodlight on the entire area.
It's like halfway through the movie they decided like, oh, we can use themed lighting and
yeah.
do some interesting things. Because so after a few escapades at the house where they can't beat the leprechaun on their own, and the leprechaun possesses the phone for a minute, which is kind of interesting. He puts his hand through the phone because I guess he's got a crush on Jennifer Aniston. But so she escapes. That's when they're throwing the shoes.
Yeah.
She escapes because she's going to go see Mr. O'Grady, who's now had a stroke and is in a mental... Mm-hmm. facility, so she's going to see if he has any secrets on how to defeat the leprechaun. But from that moment on, the film changes in style. The camera angles down the halls are all interesting.
We get like these
They're
weird
warped
tilts and stuff,
weird
yeah.
and the light, and maybe that's supposed to be scary because she's really worried that the leprechaun has followed her, so down every like corner she turns he could be there, because there's a few moments where there's shadows that maybe a leprechaun and then it's not, it's just a broom closet. But it's warped and nightmare-y in a way that the rest of the movie isn't themed, because the rest of the movie is like bright daylight with painters painting a house.
Yeah, but once darkness descends on the set, like all bets are off.
Yeah, and then we're like, we're gonna use some green floodlights, we're gonna get crazy.
There's like a really cool shot where she's stepping off the truck and we just like continue to tilt with her, and just like we stay on like a 35-degree angle for a while.
Yeah, and this movie's really into her sneakers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like she's wearing these sneakers with these like puffy pink socks, and we see them a lot in the movie.
Maybe it's because the leprechaun's so obsessed with shoes.
That and he's so short. That might be why.
Okay.
Perspective-wise.
We're seeing, if he were standing there. That's what I'm saying, yeah. And yeah, if he were standing there, this is the view we would have from his like 3 foot eyesight. Mm-hmm. Eyeline? Yeah.
So the leprechaun's got a foot fetish then. So he doesn't like Jennifer Aniston, he likes her feet.
He likes shining shoes. If he had a foot fetish, he'd be smelling them?
Or caressing them?
We're on to something.
I think the only thing I've discovered in this entire episode is that I don't like the word caress.
No.
It's not a nice word.
No.
It's gross.
It's like a dry version of the word moist. Are you one of those people that hates the word moist?
No.
Okay.
I was just hamming it up.
Got it.
My favorite word?
Favorite.
Favorite word is nebula.
Yeah.
I like that word.
I've heard you say that before.
Mm-hmm. I have another favorite word, but I forgot. Do you have a favorite word?
No, but that is fucking hilarious. I have another favorite word, but I've forgotten it. My favorite word. I don't really have a favorite word. I like, for some reason, I like undulation.
I don't like that.
I don't. I think I just like
uvula. I don't like that. But I like nebula.
That is
so
a lot,
I don't know.
Oh, really far removed from what I said, but I see what you're saying.
But you have to undulate to say uvula.
Sure. Yeah. I like it in like a descriptor that doesn't quite make sense. Like if you are going crazy and you think everything's connected, or there's some sort of weird metaphysical twist on reality, how it's like an undulation.
I didn't ask what your favorite definition was.
Okay.
I just said, like, what words do you like to say or the sound of?
Yeah, I think right now my favorite word might be rude. But other than
no. Still a definition.
You're a monster. I don't really have favorite words.
I like using really contrived words. Like, I make a purpose whenever I'm writing things to use words that are, like, out of fashion.
Sure.
Like, I use amongst instead of among.
I like amongst.
Yeah, and I use swell a lot.
And fancy. You like old-timey turn-of-the-century slang.
I sure do.
Like, britches.
Yes! And, like, unnecessary alliteration.
Yeah.
If I can make you rhyme in your head, I'm fucking doing it.
Yeah.
I can't believe you don't have a favorite word.
No, don't really, I'm not a favorites guy. It's why I always hate doing lists. Anyway, I'm not going to bring up that old problem again.
Leprechaun is a good word.
Leprechaun's a good word. It reminds me of Warwick Davis and the weird finale of this movie. thankfully, and I will say this is super great, Ozzy doesn't die in this movie. I really like that Ozzy doesn't die.
Yeah.
That would bum me out so much.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's a great setup, too, because he's accidentally swallowed a coin. Leprechaun's gonna need that coin back. He's gonna claw his way through his stomach to get to it. Like, we could just as easily have a scene where the leprechaun is playing in his intestines, right?
Oh, that, well, see, that would have been good. But,
it would have been. But not
if it wasn't,
Ozzy.
I know,
not
yeah. I know. What I do have to give this movie credit for is that despite how obvious it was that Ozzy swallowed that coin, I forgot.
Mm.
When the leprechaun is all excited because Jennifer Aniston has given him his gold back.
Yeah.
He's like all like cutesy counting, and he's like 1, 2, 3. And I was so happy for him because I was like, oh, look at him. He's got his gold. I didn't realize that there were still 15, 20 minutes left in the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
I forgot Ozzy had eaten the coin. So like, congratulations, veil over my eyes. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, there's a coin. Ozzy.
It's a good move.
Which I think is what you're supposed to feel.
I do remember being very surprised by that when I first saw this as a kid, and it really got me. And yeah, it still works. It's still very good. I'm glad you forgot. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, and I was actually kind of sad for the leprechaun in that moment. I was so happy when he got his gold. He was so cute about it. He was sitting down. He's like, okay, we're gonna count the gold.
Here we go.
What? it was a really sweet scene.
So how would you rate this movie?
It's actually a really bad movie.
It is a very bad movie. And the crazy thing too, though, despite how bad it is, you can really see that Jennifer Aniston is a legit actress in this. Like, she's actually not bad in this movie. For an early role, obviously. But I'm saying, like, there is a very good actress inside that person that you're seeing on screen.
Okay, so I will say she's very compelling to watch. I see star power in her, or whatever. Well, that's what I mean, yeah. Whatever that je ne sais quoi is when you see somebody who became famous before they were famous.
It factor.
Yeah, like I want to watch her.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not a huge Jennifer Aniston fan. I don't like the character that she's playing. No. I don't think it's well played, unfortunately. No.
She delivers what she's given well.
Yeah, but I'm definitely watching her in it. Mm. So like she, yeah. I get what you're saying. I think the character is awful.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, agreed.
Yeah.
But she sells it.
See, I disagree. I don't think she does a good job in this movie.
Okay, well,
but
whatever.
I think you have to give her credit for having whatever that thing is.
Yeah. It's a long way of saying 1.5 out of 4, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's purely because I like the Leprechaun. I think Warwick Davis is awesome.
Yeah.
There's nothing else really redeemable about this movie. I don't like the story.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a silly decision to put... Why is there a paint crew? Why are we setting up this dad-daughter relationship only to dip dad immediately?
Why are there 7 sequels?
Well,
like, that's the thing. Like, it is so thin, this movie. Like, the fact that we've got so many of them, it just goes to show how much people like the character.
Yeah, because it is solely for the character, and I think because this character is a legendary figure that cannot be killed,
mm-hmm.
he can be brought about by a different scenario every single time he comes back.
Yeah.
Somebody just needs to happen upon his gold, which, when he's dormant or whatever, which will happen at the end of every movie,
yep.
he cannot protect it.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you're always gonna find people that need money, which gets you to like a really
executive
interesting
producers,
cast of characters.
Oh, yeah. studios who own the rights.
Yeah, everybody. So your rating?
Yeah, 1.5 out of 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So of course, not that we are necessarily the final opinion on this, but based on our criteria, Wishmaster is the better Legend film.
But I do want to say, though, before we move on, I watched Leprechaun Returns not too long ago. That one came out just recently from Sci-Fi. It's on VOD now. I enjoyed it. It's also not great story-wise, but they do a nice way of... So they kind of can the sequels, as was the fashion of 2018, and it takes place right after the first one, which... You know, I like that because I didn't keep up on the sequels. I'm not up on all the plots of those.
And I think that's what's so great about that move recently. Most people have seen the original, or at least know the origins of that villain.
Yeah, and you're definitely winning back the casual viewer.
Yes.
You're
getting a new audience.
Exactly.
Without
a younger audience, and also the casual horror fan who does not see all of them.
Yeah.
This is an event because it has been so long,
mm-hmm.
so you can get people that, like me, haven't seen all the other ones or don't watch them religiously. So that was just a really smart decision.
Yeah. And everybody's talked about this to death, but it's also does service to the original movie as well. Like, you're not completely nixing it and rebooting it. Child's play. But you are at least saying, like, yeah, this movie exists and it's still good, and you should also watch it, and we're not going to get rid of it entirely. We're just going to add on to it a little.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the kills are awesome. The actor who plays the leprechaun, it isn't Warwick Davis in this one. It's a new actor, which I cannot remember his name. It's like Lucas Porto. I can't remember. He's actually really good, and his one-liners are great. They don't do the exact same leprechaun. He's still feisty. He's still witty. He's still silly. He's got an updated outfit. He's got a different hair and different style. He's good. He's really good. The kills are great. Did I already say that? Kills are great.
Yeah.
He's great.
Special effects.
Yeah. I think I actually like it more than the first one.
Yeah. But either way, let us know what you thought of Wishmaster and Leprechaun. I'm certain you've rewatched Leprechaun in the last little while. If not, you are gearing up to watch it soon. I have no idea when St. Patrick's Day is, but I know it's
March?
Somewhere around
April?
March-ish.
I said April, but it is. I think it's March.
Still a little cold outside. Not quite warm yet. It's coming up soon. but I mean, you probably revisited it before watching Leprechaun Returns. And Wishmaster, everybody's Friday pick. We're watching it all the time, right?
What? You can tweet at us at NOFS Podcast on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. And a group that is facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS. And lastly, I know this is a lot of links, we also have a official subreddit, which we're trying to kickstart back up. We post links and memes and all kinds of stuff there. That is reddit.com/r/nightmareonfilmstreet.
We are controlling transmission.
Yee-hoo! Have a trouble with 11?
Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by Baphomet & Co. Small batch soap inspired by horror and the macabre. This week's pick is the Lorraine Bar, inspired by the 2013 film The Conjuring by James Wan and based upon the works of demonologists Ed and Lorraine Warren. Memories of country kitchens, an assuring voice softly spoken, and the threat of something wicked lingering down darkened halls. Get 10% off your order with the code NIGHTMARE at BaphometandCo.com. That's 10% off with the code NIGHTMARE. Baphomet & Co., made by hands sometimes severed.
We're going to stick around for a few more minutes and play a game that Kim's put together for Patreon listeners. What do you got cooked up?
I can't remember what I called it. What did I call it? Oh, it's called Name That Legend, and we're going to play in the sequels, which neither of us really know much about.
Especially me.
So I'm going to name some synopsises from either a Wishmaster sequel or a Leprechaun sequel, and John's going to have to guess which one it belongs to. But I'm kind, and I made it multiple choice.
My knowledge is very limited. It's like, there's one in jail, there's one in space, that's about it. That's about it. So hopefully I do all right.
You can get that at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. In addition to that, you're going to get a ton of other bonus content for supporting the show, like back episodes. We have a bunch of drive home from the drive-ins of films that came out in 2018. And there's tons of mini episodes. There's merch and swag and all kinds of stuff there. We are listener supported. So that means you.
For as little as $1 an episode, you have access to a whole back catalog of bonus episodes. But you can also support the show by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, wherever you're getting this episode. It really helps the show, and it doesn't cost you anything but 2 seconds of your time.
That's it from us this week. We will catch you in 2 weeks' time with another episode. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. Just long enough to tell the tale of the Nightmare on Film Street. Ow! Help us grow the horde. Leave a review on iTunes or wherever you subscribe. Continue this week's conversation on Twitter by following at NOFS Podcast. And as always, more terror can be found lurking on our website, www.nightmareonfilmstreetpodcast.com. Until next week, stay creepy, fiends.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.